Hello, this is the Scottish Football Show, and here's what's coming up. It's official. Celtic will play Rangers in the Scottish Cup final for the first time in 22 years. The Scotland players are falling apart. And Maurice Malpass joins us to talk about that one day in Rome, 40 years on. Hello and welcome. Yes, it's episode whatever, because we are coming into the business end. And my God, are we getting fatigued? No, we are not. It's cup season, everyone. Are you excited? I certainly am. Joining me in all of this excitement is TNT's senior producer, Laura Brannan. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. An author and podcaster. Joining us once again, John Bleasdale. How are you, pal?
I'm good, Andy. Thanks very much for having me back on.
You're very welcome, very welcome. How's our weekend been so far before we get stuck into the action? Laura?
I actually did something really fun at the weekend. Normally I've got nothing to update you on, but in true cup fashion, getting into the mood of everything, I watched A Shot at Glory on Saturday night.
You did not?
I did. Now, if John, please tell me you've seen this film.
I've saw it once, yes.
Once is enough.
No. If anyone has not seen this film, you're doing Scottish football wrong, because this is a classic. Unbelievable. I mean, I've not watched it for a long, long time, and I forgot how good it was. But see, when you look at the names that are in it, apart from obviously Ally McCoy, what an actor, by the way. Like, he does a good job. He is good. You've got, I mean, apart from obvious the Michael Keaton and the Robert Duvall, but you've got Derek McInnes. You've got Ian McCall. Ian McCall actually is a bigger part than I remember. And he doesn't call himself Ian McCall. He calls himself Derek McCall.
Yeah. Playing for Queen of the South as well.
Yeah, Didier Gap playing for Rangers. It was Derek McInnes that missed the penalty for Rangers in the final. Brian Cox is the Rangers manager, which... The first time I had watched A Shot of Glory, I hadn't seen Succession. So that one blew my mind, watching this one second time round. It was great fun. Absolutely great way to spend a Saturday night. I absolutely recommend it to anyone who wants to try and find a DVD online, because that was brilliant.
It is good. I mean, Robert Duvall, off the back of that, became really good friends with Jinky Johnston as well. So Robert Duvall's like biggest memory of that. So it's weird thinking he was at Palmerston. Like the film, and you can see like Palmerston in all its glory, and he's outside in the team bus, and you're like, he was in Dumfries. Like, why?
I'm still so annoyed at the end of it as well. You get so emotionally wrapped up in that whole storyline. They should have won it at the end. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know Scottish football, Laura. The little guy never wins.
No, the establishment always wins in the end.
John, I know it. Your beloved Aberdeen, it wasn't to be, but did you at least have a good weekend?
Yeah, certainly did. It's mainly been me and the boys all weekend, because my good lady's away on holiday, sunning herself in Spain. So great fun.
Hold on, but wait a minute, John. So the good lady's away on her holiday. Mm-hmm. Are these brownie points for Germany, perhaps?
Well, see, to be fair, she's had a few years of the weekend away, so this all adds up to my 2 weeks for 1 year.
Super. Right, into the meat and two veg of this podcast, starting with a wee laugh.
If we had a bad night last night, you're having a f***ing horrendous one now.
So who's going to start things off? Laura, can you kick us off? What have you seen over the weekend that's given you a wee chuckle?
Oh, not as much a chuckle. It's just doing my OCD and something awful. The spelling mistakes that are going around just now around the Scottish Cup this weekend.
Oh, dear.
Did you see in the big screen after the first Scottish Cup semi? So when Celtic obviously qualified for the final, they put up on the big screen at Hampden, how do you even say this? Scottish Cup finalists. They put an H after the double T.
Scottish.
I don't know if this is a nod to the whole boys and the hail hail.
No, surely
is this just
not.
A typo? Or
the old Gaelic proverb, the Scottish cup.
Guys, it's on the big screen in front of 50,000. Come on.
The thing is that would have been like pre-made, like ahead of time as well. That wouldn't have been like just like, oh, let's just take that back in like really quickly. Yeah, there you go. Surely not.
No. And then just to even exceed that, on Sunday morning, so James Tavernier posted, and have you seen this? So clubs put out like match day posters, right? But Tavernier seems to have done one himself. He hasn't personally done this, but I dare say his like PR team have done this for him. But it's him, it's a match day graphic almost, but in the background, it doesn't just say Scottish Cup. It says Scotland Cup.
Shut up.
I feel like I said that with a lisp, right? But that's actually how it was spelled. Stotland.
I'm looking at it now like, oh my God, Stotland. Oh dear. That's an absolute shocker. John, have you got any funnies for me?
No, I'm sorry this morning, I don't really, but I did have a good chuckle at the fact that Arbroath had to put a statement on the back of Duncan Ferguson's comments
so weird.
Yeah, so Duncan Ferguson basically, I think it was mind games from him to try and get Arbroath to try and do Arbroath's team talk, but Arbroath felt the need to come out and condemn the comments and say we've had an apology from Inverness, which we accept, but we haven't had one from the manager. And it's like, just get on with the rest of the season, try and end on a positive note, and just stick that those comments up in your dressing room. Maybe they did, because they gave Morton a decent game yesterday, but still lost.
Aye, what is it with Scottish football clubs to have announced club statement? We must talk about this, guys. So I'm getting tired of it. Honestly, guys, like, you
been
don't
a long if, season. You've
not, if you've not got something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Just get on with it. Or deal with it, you know, behind closed doors. All right? Am I wrong? No. Right. Do you know what I enjoyed at the weekend, folks? It's not even something that happened at the weekend, but our dear beloved Ali McCoist, and during the Champions League, have you seen this put out on TNT Sports? Were you part of this, Laura? Did you stick this out? The moment where Ali McCoist reacts to Hell's Bells from AC/DC being played out at Bayern Munich Stadium, and he's like, "Oh no, surely no! Oh, that's no." That's no Hell's Bells. No, it can't be.
It can't be AC/DC. If a guitar comes in here in a minute, it's unbelievable. It is.
It's a good set list here.
It's Hell's Bells. AC/DC. Oh,
into a bit,
man,
of that.
Can't it be a bit AC/DC, man?
He starts strumming away, doesn't he?
Proper dad air guitar.
Absolutely dadding it out there.
Yeah, brilliant. I saw them, Glasgow Apollo 1980. That's for the opening tune.
He starts drumming, I'm watching it there, he starts drumming away. It's so funny. God bless him. Right, yeah, we're not having a laugh anymore. We're not, because Laura, in the last week or so, it feels like all of our preparations for Germany seems to be getting a big old hefty kick in the buzz. Can you tell me what's going on with some of these Scottish stars that should be playing for Scotland and Germany, but most likely will not be?
This is quite unnerving, actually, the amount of players that just fell like dominoes this week.
Lies.
Okay, so to start with, we had the... Let's start the list, okay. To begin with, let's start off with the one we knew. Aaron Hickey, he's been out all season. Well, he's been out for most of the season now.
A good while,
yeah.
He's not been ruled out yet. He's still fighting to come back for the Euros. It's his hamstring. There's no guarantee he's going to be back in time. And even if he does, it's very likely that he won't have played a single game since, you know, kind of 8 months or so, whatever that adds up to. He's not going to be match sharp, is the long and short of it. Another one that was ruled out last week was Lewis Ferguson. Really, really bad injury here. ACL in his knee. Really, like, one of the worst injuries you can get in football. He needs an op. Well, I've had it by now. He's ruled out to the end of the year, basically. I think it's November time, his manager said. So that's really, really bad news. Nathan Patterson, the latest one this week. Another hamstring injury. He needs an op. He's been ruled out for the rest of the season. Look, I think if he makes it, it's going to be an absolute miracle. It's just a case of how bad the hamstring injury is. But if you look at Aaron Hickey, this doesn't look great. The latest one was Stuart Armstrong. So this was the weekend. He went off with a foot injury. He got stretchered off. So he went down off the ball, got stretchered off, and it looks like he's now been ruled out of the rest of the season as well. So again, really bad news. Hopefully there's more comes out at the start of the week once the club have managed to assess this. And then another one on Sunday, which we don't have any news on yet, was Scott McTominay. He just came back from injury for the cup semi-final, and then he went off quite near the end with what looked like an ankle knock. He did walk off though, so I'm hoping that there's nothing too serious in that. But it's starting to all add up now, and it's getting a little bit
concerning. Yeah, it's concerning. I mean, the right back position for Scotland, we've in the last year or so, we've kind of felt quite comfortable, like finally having like good balance in the defensive area, but in that area in particular, considering the left back position is so strong. But John, I do worry now, like who could be the cover for it, really?
Yes, it's scratching the bones time because Anthony Ralston's not getting games for Celtic, and there's doubts as to whether he's good enough to step up. Max Johnson, the guy who I rate quite highly, he's mainly a squad player at Stirling Grass. He's coming off the bench here and there, but it's not real ideal. Ross McCrory is at least playing week in, week out for Bristol City since he returned in January, but he's not had an international cap yet. He'd be ideal to have in for right back in midfield, to be honest, given the lack of midfield options that we're now having.
Did he do that for Aberdeen much as well? He played defence quite a lot for Aberdeen, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he's predominantly a midfielder, isn't he?
Yeah, we signed him as a holding midfield player, and Dick McInnes played him as a holding midfielder, did really well. Stephen Glass came in, put him at centre-back where he's not very good. Jim Goodwin then started him at centre-mid, then put him in centre-back because he never had many centre-backs, and then put him at right-back and actually did well at right-back in Bristol City, signed him as that and played him as a right-back. So, comfortable enough for him. I mean, there's been some people saying bring Stephen O'Donnell back, but I mean, I like Stephen O'Donnell, nice guy.
Yeah.
He's not had the best of seasons for Motherwell, let's be honest. So, yeah, I think at this rate, we could be calling back Alan Hutt and Stuart McKimmy at this rate for competition. But...
oh my God, Stuart McKimmy, my God.
That's me showing my head. But Hickey, at least he's back in training. And do you know what? I would take, he's one of the few players that's worth the risk if he's not much sharp, still stick him in the team because he's that important to us right now.
Yeah. Laura, when's the deadline for the squad?
We've actually, it's less than a month away now. So they're looking to confirm the squad on the 21st of May. But they don't have to submit it and register this squad until the 7th of June, it works out as, which is a week before the first game. I think there's been a few complaints and a few kind of hitbacks because it's still one of the friendly dates. So it doesn't give teams enough chance to really assess after their last friendly got into the tournament. Us being one of them, because that's the night we play Finland. But to be fair, even if players do pick up injuries between the 21st of May and the 7th of June, they can still swap players out. In fact, they can swap them out up until the tournament starts, as long as they're injured. It's just after that, obviously, you can't. But I mean, as of now, can we just cancel football, please? And just wrap our players up in cotton wool? Because I'm looking at like Liverpool going out of the Europa League, and I'm thinking that's good news for us because it protects Andy Robertson. Then you're seeing like Villa going through in the Conference League, and you're like, oh my God, he's going to have a game at the end of May at this rate if he gets through to the final. That is how I'm watching football now, and I will be for the next month. It's not going to be an enjoyable month.
Yeah, wrap Scott McTominay and Cotton Wool for the FA Cup final. So, man, you should do, because they've got nothing else to play for in the league.
They don't rate him anyway, so they won't appreciate him if he does play, so just leave him off.
He has saved Ten Hag a few times this season, but who knows if Ten Hag's going to be lasting after the summer anyway. So I'd love to see Scott McTominay kind of leave Man United, even though he seems to be a bit of a super sub for them. But there you go. even though we're in the Euros, John, we had some World Cup legends being created, did we not?
Yes, so Scotland participated in the Cerebral Palsy World Championships. They played this tournament out in Salou. It was it's a seven-a-side tournament, and they topped the group. It's a five-team competition, so the top two went through. Scotland won their group with convincing 3-0 win over Northern Ireland, 6-2 over South Korea, 4-1 against Chile, and then lost 1-0 Italy, but went through the final against Northern Ireland. And I watched this game, and they pumped them 4-0, and I just thought it was it's tremendous, the amount of coverage that they got as well, the amount of players, obviously come in, people with cerebral palsy who have had brain injuries and have suffered strokes, you know, to give them that opportunity to get into football, I think it's just amazing, and well done them, and hopefully they can grow on from here.
That's really nice, and I really enjoyed there was a tweet out from the Scotland National Cerebral Palsy football team to Ryanair, saying, does this qualify as extra hand luggage? And it's the trophy in the hand luggage little container where you'd like test your if your hand luggage is the right size. Like, that's, it's good to know the banter goes all the way through our society. It's absolutely superb.
And Ryanair responded to the Be Fair and says, well done.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
And they still charge them 50 euros.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. Absolute scumbags. But there was, as I said in the intro, it is cup season, and what a helicopter Sunday we had, Laura, in the Highlands, by the way. Now, I remember looking at the Highland League and looking at Brechin saying, like, oh, Brechin are scooshing this league. Nae tother a ba'. But it's all changed on the last day. Bucky Thistle are champions. This is absolutely amazing. So I think it's going to be Bucky against your hometown, Laura, East Kilbride, who won the Lowland League. Is that right?
Yeah, they won it last weekend. Not that I'm going to be biased or anything, but I want East Kilbride to win. But yeah, this is for a place to play, obviously, the team that comes bottom of League 2. And this is the whole pyramid playoff to win their place in the SPFL. To be fair, Bucky, we're going into this one in whole position. They just had to win their game. To be fair, going into the last day of the season, it was Bucky, Brechin and Fraserburgh that could all have won it. So Bucky ended up beating Keith 1-0. Brechin, oh, this is a tongue twister, Brechin beat Brora Rangers 2-1. Fraserburgh went and beat Strathspey Thistle 11-0. And such a shame for them, because had Bucky and Brechin both lost, that would actually have tipped Fraserburgh's goal difference and they'd have won the league. So they did in their power. They did everything they had to do, but they were waiting on results elsewhere. So that's such a shame. That's a real heartbreaker for them.
Yeah, no, pretty cool though. Like Bucky, their first silverware in 7 years as well. Like, really special. And it's why when the pyramid came in, John, like, that's what makes these moments now way more special than they ever were.
It definitely does, but it's still a shame that it's only one place that's up for grabs. That the two of them can't just go straight in, and they've got to fight for one place, and it's still up against the bottom side. They could still not make it, which I think is pretty crap, to be perfectly honest. That's something that needs to be reviewed, but then that's the debate for another podcast, isn't it? But yeah, good luck to both teams. I'm not really fussed two wins. I mean, East Kilbride is close to me, but I want to see some more Northern teams getting, because last few years it's been dominated by the Central Belt, and I worry that Highland League is going to get isolated, because there's some good clubs up there too, but it is about investment. There is more money down the Central Belt, unfortunately.
The last one was Cove, wasn't it? Cove Rangers was the last team.
And that's because they had a really extensive budget compared to others, to be fair, and they've done well. But it'll be an interesting playoff. I think East Kilbride will do it.
I'd love to see like this playoff of all playoffs being televised. Like, that it'd be such a, like, it's almost just like doffing the cap to the lower down the pyramid.
I would like to see them make a spectacle of the playoffs.
Totally.
Do similar to what they do in England. Why have a two-legged final? And it doesn't need to be Hampden for the final. Make it like McDermott Park, for example, or, you know, Tynecastle East Road, and make it a day of it rather than just a few hundred or 1,000 or 2,000 fans at lower league stadiums. Just make an occasion of it. This is where we need to sell our product. But I don't think those that run the game do it properly. But I'll get off my high horse.
There's so much to be done around it. Like it's really, really, playoffs are special, man. It doesn't matter like who's involved. There's stories all over the place, and they should be told. But we're not going to tell them right now. So let's talk about the PFA. PFA have announced their team of the year, guys. And we're just going to focus on the Premiership, not Championship, League One, League Two. So the Premiership team of the year is Jack Butland in goals. So you can make noises if you disagree. James Tavernier, Cameron Carter-Vickers. Why? Liam Scales, Owen Beck, Matt O'Reilly, John Lundstrom. Why? Callum McGregor, Bojan Miovski, Lauren Shankland, and Theo Blair. Oh, so Theo Bear. Blair? Theo Bear. Rar. Is that a fair... Sorry, I'm so sorry. Is that a team that would win the league? I don't know, man. I don't know. John, any exclusions that you think are unfair?
I mean, Liam Scales has improved a bit this season at Celtic, but I wouldn't have had him ahead of, like, I think Kilmarnock can
over Cameron Carter-Vickers, who's barely played this season.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was just going to say. I don't, Kilmarnock can feel aggrieved they don't have a player in there. Like, how's Danny Armstrong not made this team? And how's Stuart Finlay and Lewis Mayo not made this team? I mean, they've all got... No, I think they've all had good seasons as well. And also, I think Lennon Miller's had a better season than John Lundstrom. I think John Lundstrom's been distinctly average most of the season.
Totally.
And most Rangers fans I know have said as much as well. You can't disagree with Jack Butland in goals. He's been the best keeper in the league by a country mile. The front three picked themselves. They've all been superb. So, but yeah, just almost the spine that seems questionable.
Do you think Theo Bear is worthy of being up in the front three, Laura?
I think Theo Bear's I think he's paid off a lot of the hype that's been framed around him recently. He's been very hyped up by the club, and I feel like that's maybe had a knock-on effect. I feel like it's actually harsh on Blair Spittle. I feel like he's been Motherwell's Player of the Year this year. He's been a game changer many times. Just make it 4-4-2 instead of 3-3. It doesn't have to be 3 up front.
Yeah, it's weird, really. I mean, I think I agree with you, John. Like, Stuart Finlay is a decent shout for having a being involved in that. And I'm trying to think of the... Yeah, Marley Watkins for Kilmarnock as well has had a pretty influential season for them as well. I don't know. Owen Beck's a decent shout. Matt O'Reilly, Callum McGregor, yeah, fair enough. Bojan Miovski, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. So yeah, decent. They're not wrong in most of the areas, but yeah, there's a few questions.
Well, it was the players that picked it, so they know best.
He steps right footed, saved! Celtic are into the Scottish Cup final. Finally, we have a winner in one of the most incredible Scottish Cup semi-finals you're ever likely to witness.
Right, shall we talk about the weekend? Because it's been, and particularly the Scottish Cup, because it was an absolute barnstormer. So as we know now, the Scottish Cup final on the 25th of...
Me,
thank you. It's going to be contested between Celtic and Rangers, because Celtic on Saturday were winners by penalties against Aberdeen, and Rangers were 2-0 winners over Hearts. It's the best I've seen Aberdeen play against Celtic in years. It was an absolute epic of a Scottish Cup semi-final at Hampden. Really special, and you must be quite proud of the team.
Yeah, you can't be in, a bit proud of the way they came back, because, you know, it's no secret Aberdeen have this shit the bed mentality whenever they play Celtic. I mean, there's been times they've been beaten before they've even stepped in the pitch at times. So it was refreshing to see us take the lead so early. I feel for Angus McDonald with the goal. I mean, it is a horrendous mistake, but you know, as we'll talk about shortly, he showed immense character to then come back into the game. Mm-hmm. It was looking at one point as if, you know, we couldn't get our own half, Celtic got a goal, but then Celtic didn't really create anything, and then we came alive in the last 10 minutes. Peter Levy made a couple of substitutions and they worked a treat, and you know, we got that, we finally got that equaliser from Sokla. And then the next time when Matt Riles scores, you think it's probably game over. But again, we've shown, you know, great mentality to get back in the game. Should have had a penalty, but at least that didn't prove decisive because we still got on with it and got the equaliser. And that's where McDonald, I mean, to step up and get the equaliser to take us into penalties, and then he takes a penalty in the shootout and scores it. A wee bit lucky it went under Joe Hart, but still, to have the ball to go up and take a penalty when you're a defender, I think you've got to give him a lot of credit.
Oh, you listen, like the whole. Angus McDonald deserves a lot of credit because obviously Graham Shinney was not available to play in this game because he got stupidly red carded, which should never have happened anyway, in the quarterfinals. But he was ineligible to play, so Angus McDonald steps up and captains the team. And this is a guy who, like, when he was 26, he's 31 now, when he was 26, he was diagnosed with bowel cancer. Came back and has like reignited his career, came up to Aberdeen and has been a decent player. He's been battled with injury though most of the season, and he comes in and he's an absolute stalwart in this match. Takes his penalty really, really well. There was some weird moments though in this game, John, as well, because like Joe Hart took his penalty but then subsequently missed it. I think he saw Ederson.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. What is the thinking behind this? Because I was covering the Man City game for the Champions League during the week, and I was like, whoa, hold on, a goalie's taking the fifth penalty. What's going on here? I'd never seen it before. I'd only ever seen goalies take like the 10th or 11th one. Only 10th or 11th, like further along the chain.
Yeah, sure.
But never the one of the five. And then it happened again. When it came around to Hart, I was like, well, hold on a minute. Is this a Man City thing? Is this came from his time at Man City? I don't know if it's connected in any way.
Well, he was. Brendan Rodgers did come out and say that he had been practicing penalties all week. And apparently he does it all the time. He takes penalties like in training and stuff like that. But Celtic have got a history as well. Like, do you not remember Artur Boruc?
But that was like the 10th penalty, though. That was because it had went all the way around the team. He took it. But he is obviously still the last goalie to score for Celtic at Hampden. I heard him saying that after the game. But there was a thing with Hart, though. I don't know, watching that as a neutral, there was a sense of great satisfaction when he missed it because he was stepping up there trying to be the hero. And I didn't like that because he was making it about himself. And what was the deal with the smirk when he missed it? I did not like his whole body language at all during it.
What did you think, John?
There was a bit of John Terryism about it, wasn't it? When he took that penalty, because it's his last season. He wanted a wee bit of headlines, and he'd had the gamesmanship before Ryan Duncan's penalty as well. So from our point of view, that was a good chuckle. But I'm going to give him credit as well, just to balance out. When he saves the penalty, there was no heroics, look at me, or anything. He was very humble. It was like almost apologetic, saying, apologies it got to this point.
Well done on your actual job, Joe. taking the goalie back to the strikers.
But do you remember, I don't know if you remember your 2004, but in that Portugal England game, Ricardo the goalkeeper took the winning penalty to put England out after saving from Brazil. So it's not that uncommon.
I'm going to go on YouTube it right now just to enjoy it.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, let's watch it now. Let's put it up on the podcast on YouTube, Laura, because that's where we are. We've got YouTube, haven't we? Let's slide that one in there. Great show.
Our podcast is doing a throwback to Euro 2000 and Euro 2004, so it'll get snuck in there.
Oh, nice.
Very, very good. That's enough about your podcast, John, okay? You're on this one now, right? Okay? Remember where you are. So, yeah, Celtic go through, Aberdeen go out. Just before we move on to Rangers, do you think, I said last week that I wonder if Aberdeen did announce Yemi Tallien as manager, that would have an impact. Do you think it did, John?
Possibly. I mean, you should have a motivation for a cup semi-final anyway, although, as we've discussed, Aberdeen don't have a great record against Celtic in particular at Hampden in semi-finals, but it maybe did give them a little bit of a G up for the week. You think, oh, new manager's coming, better start improving now, start putting in a better level of performance. And hopefully, I mean, Peter Levin said that in the game, this is the standard that we need to set for the remaining five games to make sure we don't get hauled down to this playoff. I personally think we'll be okay. Say that now, but we've got three home games. We should have enough to keep ourselves away from that 11th place now. And they've got enough motivation with the new manager coming in, because he won't want to come in to a team that's been in a playoff to avoid relegation.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So on to Sunday, and is it right to say fairly straightforward?
I think it was a massive missed opportunity for Hearts, to be honest. I mean, they didn't start the game well. They defended for the goal wasn't good. I mean, to be fair to Dessers, who's taken a lot of stick, he showed great composure to net that opening goal. But in particular, the start of the second half, Hearts were all over Rangers, and Rangers were looking a bit disjointed, but it was always the wrong pass. It was always a pass played behind, or in Vargas's case, he didn't play it ill enough. He went to the byline as a cross, it's then cut out. They never really created anything for Jack Butland to worry about. Matt Butland makes a good save in the first half at one point. And then in the second half, and then later on, obviously, Rangers get a break. I thought Cantwell had actually messed this up by playing the ball to Dessers, but
yeah.
Keeper makes the save, but then Dessers, to be fair, shows good composure to slide it under Gordon for the second goal, and you just knew it was game over. But I think Hart, you know, we talk about Aberdeen having not a great mentality when they play Celtic. Hearts is similar. I think it's almost like there's a mental block, and an incredible stat, they've never beaten Rangers at Hampden.
Incredible, isn't it? It's mad, that. It's absolutely mad. But there you go. These things come back to haunt you. One thing that I certainly spotted and has went round social media like wildfire is Fabio Silva, guys. Fabio Silva, who, let's just be brutally honest, apart from the penalty at Ibrox against Celtic, he was flinging himself about all day in that game. And let's be honest, this semi-final, what was he doing, Laura? Have you seen this? Yeah. Fabio Silva flinging himself to the ground when there's literally no Hearts player near him. He doesn't trip up. He doesn't, you know, his legs don't come together and it's a bit accidental. He does fall as if he's trying to win a penalty. And you hate diving. I know this because you've went on about it before at length.
Yeah.
So give me it full barrels.
I mean, part of me is like, well, what? Surely there's a reason. surely the ball was coming across too fast and he mistimed his run, but it doesn't look like he tripped up. Was he trying to save himself, like, his embarrassment by not timing his run to the ball and decided to try and fall and blame somebody else for it and then realise there was actually nobody near him at the time? I don't know, but to genuinely go down like that to try and win a penalty, it's embarrassing. That's why I want more players booked for it, because the only way you're going to cut it out...
Do you think he should have got booked for it?
It's a hard one because it's just so ridiculous.
It's so weird, yeah.
I feel like because it is so ridiculous, there's got to be another reason for it. And I feel like I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt in this case. But in general terms, I just feel like more players need to get booked more often to try and stamp it out of the game. Because if more refs are saying, you don't get away with this... Yeah. It's the only way that players will stop doing it.
It's so weird because I don't think any Rangers fan can defend it other than saying that, oh, he's just kind of, you know, not thought about it properly. But like, he looks like a complete idiot, right? If he'd just been professional enough, he would have scored, John.
Yeah, I just don't know what he's thinking. And I know a couple of Rangers fans that say 40 million. I wouldn't even give 2 million for him. And he's not looked anything near a 40 million player. And that just shows how obscene and how ridiculous and how arrogant the English Premier League are, that they pay this kind of money for that kind of player. It's just ridiculous. But and the dive was just pathetic.
Yeah.
There's no other words to describe it.
Pathetic, Silva. Sort yourself out, mate. So with Laura, with this being Celtic Rangers Cup final, this has an impact on Europe as well, because like there won't be another team that could potentially go into Europe. Can you give me the lowdown, please?
Yeah, the results of the weekend means that now fifth place is guaranteed the European spot, the missing European spot, because we know now that the team that are going to win the cup is going to be one that's already qualified for Europe itself. So it, as it stands, it means St Mirren are in the European spot place. Really exciting though that it kind of, they've been breaking it down. There's a kind of breakdown of where they all go to. Obviously, first into the Champions League automatically. It's now changing next season, remember, so it's not the group stages as we always kind of refer to it as, it's now the league stage, which is a bit confusing because it's Champions League league stage. But so yeah, first place John's guaranteed face. Yeah, let's go into the permutations of that another week. Not doing that right now. But yeah, so first place obviously guaranteed Champions League, second place is in the Champions League qualifiers but will be guaranteed to go down to the Europa League at least. Third place is in the Europa League playoff, so they're guaranteed the Conference League at least. Fourth place are in the Europa League qualifiers, and fifth place is in the Conference League qualifiers. So we're guaranteed three teams to be in Europe. The so-called group stages that we know as group stages, whatever you want to call it, next season, league stage, phase, whatever you want to call it, and fourth and fifth are the ones that are going to be in the qualifiers. So yeah, it's got a good good knock-on effect to Europe. Another exciting season before the kind of coefficient drops off for the
that's a really big point, Laura, that you finish off on, because next season, John, any of the Scottish teams that are in Europe, the importance of getting like really good results, although it might not help us in the short term, we need to start doing better, because after next season, we won't have the guaranteed league stages, as Laura points out. We're going to have to be going through way more qualifiers, our club teams, that is.
Yeah, and it needs everyone to stand up. We can't just be relying on Rangers over the last couple of years and Celtic before that, you know, weighing everything up. Aberdeen, apparently our best performances came in Europe this season, but we still went out. We still only won one game, and the one game we won was a meaningless one in the end. Hibs, to be fair, did come through a couple of ties before they faced Aston Villa. But Hearts blew it in their groups, in their playoff as well. They didn't really turn up in the two games, I don't feel. And over the years, you just have to churn off the results. So for every time that Rangers go through in the last 16 Europa League and into the final that year, you're also getting the embarrassing results in qualifying round one and two, and that just can't continue. We need to start doing better. So if whoever gets through between Dundee and St Mirren, find a bit of extra cash and just pump into getting a team good enough to beat whatever team from Lithuania, Malta, etc., and just get that coefficient back up again.
Totally. And finally, Laura, it's very rare in, you know, the league do you get a final day title decider. You don't get, you know, a big title decider between Celtic and Rangers on, you know, either ground or whatever. But this cup got, you know, the Scottish Cup, to finally have its first Celtic Rangers final since 2002 is going to be a totally massive occasion.
It's actually really exciting. I can't believe it's been 22 years since the last one. But yeah, this is the thing, that the league try so hard to avoid a title decider between the two, that as soon as the split is done, you know they're going to be the first, second, or third game, and they're going to try and get it out of the way as soon as possible. It can't be the midweek game at night time, and it can't be a Saturday 3 o'clock game. And do you know what makes it so good? It's the Scottish Cup final, Saturday 3 p.m. It is do or die, winner takes all. And that is what everyone is crying out for in a Celtic Rangers game, because you don't want it sanitised by saying, they're going to win the league next week, or they're going to have already won the league by that point. It is, everything is riding on that one game. So yeah, it's going to be a great one.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the SFA do this year if the FA in England say we're having our final at 3 o'clock. remember yep. last season. And can I just say right now, Police Scotland will not entertain Celtic and Rangers being delayed to 5:30. There's on a Saturday night or bank holiday weekend, there is no chance in hell that's going to happen. So what are you going to do? Move the Scottish Cup Finals to 12:30? Good luck with that one, Ian Maxwell. But I don't think...
They won't win it. The police will win. Yeah. Police are going to win the Scottish Cup, okay?
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Right, well, this year marks 40 years since Dundee United came within a whisker of making the European Cup final. Jim McLean's side, along with Sir Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen, had formed a new firm to challenge the biggest teams, not only domestically in Scotland, but on the continent as well. But where Aberdeen's adventures in Europe reaped the ultimate reward in the 1983 Cup Winners' Cup, the Tangerines were forced to wonder what might have been. I'm delighted to say joining us to look back on that period in United's history is a man who was at the centre of it all, a Tannadice legend with over 800 appearances for them, as well as appearing for over 50 times for Scotland, a Hall of Famer, Maurice Malpass. How are you, Maurice?
I'm good, Andrew. Yourself?
I'm very good. I'm very, very good. It's good to have you on to talk about one of the greatest eras of Dundee United's history.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see what rubbish you can ask me and what rubbish I can answer. It's a long time ago, so hopefully my memory's isn't too bad.
We'll take a step back before the Roma game, because the thing is, when most people delve into this story, thinking back that Dundee United reaching a European Cup semi-final, it's an amazing feat. It's just such a shame it doesn't really get the opportunity to happen as much anymore.
Well, I don't think it'll ever happen again, let's be honest. For a provincial team like Dundee United to get to the semi-finals of the Champions League, as they call it nowadays, would be unheard of. We had a team that suited to play, you know, the style of football that was played in Europe at the time. We had a team that suited to, you know, we're down to a T, you know, we could defend. And we had fantastic pace, you know, with Paul Sturrock, Ralphie Mullen, Eamon Bannon. You know, they could catch the pigeons. Honestly, we would just draw teams down on top of us and play them on the break, and 9 times out of 10, we won. Mm-hmm. We found it a lot easier playing away from home than we did at home when we played in Europe, I've got to admit. And it was great. You know, we always went away on a Monday for a Wednesday evening game. You know, Jim McLean wanted us to have an extra night to get used to the beds and everything. So we had 2-3 days of absolute hilarity. You know, there was the boys were quite tight. Plenty of banter, and we loved our football, obviously. So the three days we were away were always a blast.
You just spent a little bit of time reeling off some of the names that you were playing with that were in that squad throughout a lot of the 80s. So it was a team that was together for quite a long time. And they're not just, you know, Dundee United royalty. They're names that everybody in Scottish football will know and remember and enjoy, you know, Dave Neary and Paul Sturrock and yourself and Eamon Bannon, Hamish McAlpine. It was an incredible team that Jim McLean assembled. Obviously, you're in the midst of it. And to get into the European Cup, you won the league the year before. It's the one and only time Dundee United have won the top flight title in Scotland. Could you just give us a sense of what it was like being part of that group of players and being under such a legendary manager like Jim McLean as well? Like, what was it that set you guys, and maybe Aberdeen to a certain extent, apart at that time during the kind of mid to late 80s in Scottish football?
Our strength was our teamwork. If you took us individually, if you take Paul Sturrock out of the equation, Ralphie Mullen out of the equation, and I'll say David Eyre out of the equation because he's the best centre-half I've played with, the rest of us were probably better than average players, but that's about it. But when you put us together, you know, our total was far greater than, you know, the 11 or 12 individuals. We just gelled, we worked hard for each other, we enjoyed playing for each other. Any time it was a European game, we had a Saturday night out prior to it. Any time somebody's wife was pregnant, we had a night out. Any time our kiddie was born, we had a night out. Any time somebody crossed the road and never got a bus, we had a night out. We were close. We were close socially. How we Jim had set us, how he set us up, and how he wanted us to play, it became quite easy actually. If I'm being honest, simple to play. You got the ball forward, get the ball into the box, get attempts at goals, score goals, don't lose any goals. Simple. There was nothing fancy. The training was short, sharp, very hard. We were the fittest team in the world. Majority of times, because of the players, because of the banter, it was great to go to training, and it you handled the games. We enjoyed playing, or at least I enjoyed playing.
The run you have to get to the Roma games, you were kind of blown away. Incredible teams. I think you beat the Maltese champions in the first round, and then Liège in the second round. So you're in the quarterfinals, and you come up against Rapid Vienna, who I think at the time had the 1982 Golden Boot winner has Krankl in their squad, but you win in away goals to go through. What was the kind of feeling before any of those games when you were bringing them back to Tannadice?
We quite fancied ourselves. Obviously, the first game in Malta, we were expected to win that one. So that one was done and dusted. And then you started playing against teams you recognised. But everybody hated coming to Tannadice. You know, Tannadice at that time, I don't know how much you were told. 18,000, 20,000 or something. But they were on the pitch, virtually on the pitch. You went to the bigger stadiums abroad and at a running track. You could barely see the crowd, never mind hear them. And I've spoken to tons of seasoned pros that came, and they've all said the same thing. It was really intimidating to play at Tannadice, which we found strange. But they were used to playing in the bigger stadiums, the wide open stadiums, and they found that difficult. So we used that to our advantage. The European crowd were absolutely mental. They shouted you, cheered you. And it was one of these things we, Jim, used to say, it's the first 20 minutes we'll win or lose the game with the crowd. Mm. And it was just, honestly, it was just get the ball on the box, fight for second balls, get attempts at goals. And it's amazing when you have two or three shots on target, how the crowd goes up and up and up. Mm. And it drove you on. And then we'd go away from home, and as I said before, we were quite relaxed playing away from home because we had pace, lightning pace, and we knew we could defend and we'd get through to the next round.
It's mad, really, and then when you go into the Roma game, there was a lot of pressure on Roma because the final that year was at the Stadio Olimpico.
Yeah.
So you're going to face the Romans.
For me, the game was virtually yesterday. When you start talking about the different matches leading up to the Roma game, you can remember certain bits, but as soon as you start talking about the Roma game, you can remember all the 3 or 4 days that was involved in the second game. The first game, I think everybody was shocked that we actually won.
Jim McLean, he did end up coming out after that game. You were 2-0 winners, and he said you were on steroids, which the Italian press didn't really get that joke.
No, you got to remember something. Wee Jim was really superstitious. So he probably wore the same knickers to every game. That's how superstitious he was. So whatever we'd done in the first round, we'd done the next game in the next round. There was nothing changed. They prepared the same way. And the game at Tannadice, they had a few chances. We scored a couple of goals. After the game, I think Wee Jim had a bad press conference that day when he was saying we were on steroids. Might have been on lager, but no steroids. You'd have popped a couple of players, or supposedly had a pop at a couple of players, or the Roma team, or Italy, or whatever. And then the Italian press made a big thing about it. When we went out to Italy, arrived on the Monday, it was a carnage at the airport. Bus was getting battered to bits, driving to the hotel. The staff in the hotel were barely speaking to you, you know, they were quite rude. The fire alarm went off about 1 or 2 in the morning the night before the game, which, you know, we had that a few times. It was amazing how they stand outside for 2 hours or something. And there wasn't even a fire. But it was one of the things we just laughed about. Yeah, it's happened to other places we went to. The hassle, we never thought about it. And then we turned up at the game, an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours before the game, and there was about 60,000 people there. I'd never seen so many people at a game sale in my life. And they were throwing oranges and apples and everything at us.
That's very healthy.
Yeah, John Hope was dealt with an orange that had been thrown to the game, Rose Ed, 55 miles away. It looked sore. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. But I've said it before, Dundee United losing 2-0 abroad, I have to be a really good team. Dundee United losing 3 goals abroad in a European game, for me, at that time, was a no-no. Obviously, we did lose 3 goals. We never played particularly well. They maybe got a run of the ball, whatever. But we got beat. It was an eye-opener for me in terms of, I never thought we'd lose games like that. it was amazing. The disappointment after the game was amazing. You know, it was massive. A lot of people thought, ah, well, it was great to get to the semi-final. But after winning 2-0 at Tannery's, and we played so poorly in Rome to lose 3-0, it was a massive downer. When we went back to the airport, the Italians made sure the plane wasn't there. We seemed to be in the airport for ages. And Jock Steen was there as a friend of Jim McLean. And he took me aside. He came and chatted to me. And he told me in Rome Airport that I was going to get capped for Scotland at the end of that season. So I went from the depths of despair to I couldn't wait to get home to tell my folks.
Wow.
It was strange for me. So I was on a major downer because it did start setting in. We'll never get to the final of the European Cup again. What a disaster we've had. And then the Scotland manager comes and says, I'm going to cap you at the end of the season. Get your head up and get on with it. So that was us. And I was getting married at the end of the season as well. I made my debut for Scotland on the Friday night in Marseille. After the game, I said to Jock Steen, Gaffer, I'm not good enough for this. And I remember he whacked me and he says, you'll never play against a better team, son. That team will win the European Championships. Well, France did win the European Championship that year. And thinking back, I probably didn't play against a better team. But I played on the Friday night. I had my stag do coming back on the flight to Glasgow. And I got married. I got married on the Saturday morning or Saturday at lunchtime. Oh, wow. So it was a bit of a whirlwind weekend, that one. You know, Scotland cap, and then you got married and everything. So
I can only think about how the missus was, what the thoughts were going around the hurried. Like, that flight better be on time.
I think she was concerned that I might get washed. The Scotland boys were good. We had more than one or two drinks on the plane. And then my dad came and picked me up at the airport, thankfully, so I couldn't get lost any place in Glasgow.
That's amazing. You just had such a run of, you know, like the highs and lows of football and the highs and lows of your own personal life as well. It's just looking at that room again, because obviously a couple of years after that, after the game, it kind of comes to light. You know, there's rumours about the referee being bribed, and Roma were banned for a season from European competition in the end as well, which was kind of just reduced to a fine in the end. And you know, all these years later, I think you had the son of the president, Dino Viola, admitting basically that his father had tried to get the referee on their side. I mean, did you know any of this at the time? Did you and the other players find out? And did that change anything of how you felt about the game and the way you went out?
We never knew anything at all. I've got to admit, during the game, I never thought the referee had a particularly bad game. If people are saying it was obvious that he was biased towards Roma, I never felt that. I never felt there was any major dodgy decisions that he gave to them. Never felt that. Once the press guys told us, however, months later it was, well, that's happened. Nothing we can do. Mm-hmm. Paul Sturrock, he got in touch with UEFA to see if we could get Roma's runner-up medals, you know, because they had blagged their way into the final against Liverpool, but I'm not too sure any of the players would have set a medal that way.
No.
It's unfortunate, it's disappointing, but let's be honest, if it happened to Dundee United, it's probably happened to one or two other teams as well. If it did happen.
It was so, so cool, guys, to speak to Maurice Malpass, like a proper Scottish Football Hall of Famer. And just to point anyone that's listening on the podcast or if you're watching on YouTube, we've got the long version, the unabridged version will be out on YouTube very, very soon. It's such a good chat with so many like interesting stories of his time being a young footballer at Dundee United all the way through, talking about Roma and some of that European run that they had in the 80s and a few other little tidbits too. But off the back of all of that, coming to current times with Dundee United, they've pretty much all but sealed the championship title. They beat Ayr at 1-0 at Tannadice, which means that it's all but down to goal difference, if anything, if Raith are going to try and catch them. But they've got a good goal difference of 47 on Raith Rovers, who have just got 11. So yeah, with goal difference is 47 to 11, it's quite dominant. So they'll pretty much, United will seal it against Airdrie on Saturday in the penultimate match of the season. And John, they've done amazing, Dundee United. They've got their critics, but ever since they lost to Raith in Dundee in December, all credit to them.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it's an interesting stat from DFC Stats, which published a table since Raith beat United at Tannadice. Now, bear in mind, there's a couple of teams that played 18, some play 17, because there was also games in hand at that point. Dundee United is actually top of the form table along with Airdrie, with 34 points from 18, 17 games respectively. But Raith Rovers are seventh in that table. And I think that just sums up the... But since then, it's not quite gone according to plan. They've only won 6 out of 17 since then. I think the biggest thing from a Raith Rovers point of view, twice they were 2-0 up against Arbroath at home and then away, and they only picked up 1 point. And if you're doing that against the bottom team of the league, you're not going to make a title challenge. But United have had their critics. They've looked as though at times they've been bottling it, but they've got the job done, or more or less got the job done. And yeah, it'll be interesting seeing back in the top flight. And Dundee Derby, look forward to next season, which will be great, and hopefully Sky pick it up.
Don't be daft.
Can I just be a big grumpy old Karen for a minute?
Like every other podcast.
More so this week. What on earth were the Dundee United fans invading the pitch for at full time? I mean, I hate pitch invasions when teams win titles at the best of times, but they haven't even mathematically won it. They're going to win the league. They're going to lift the trophy at home on the last day of the season. They're going to win it next week away at Airdrie. You've got two more chances to invade the pitch if you really, really must do it. But you can't do it before it's mathematically clinched, guys. You look ridiculous.
Yeah, when you think about it, like that last day of the season's like a Friday night fixture as well against Partick Thistle. So like that's the time to do it. It is a bit weird. I'm on your side with this one, Laura. I don't quite. Do you think they maybe got a little bit confused? they maybe thought that they'd won it. They had. Well,
poor groundsman. Poor groundsman's like, I've got another game to prepare for.
I know.
It's fine. We know the Tannadice pitch is pristine, so it doesn't matter.
That is very true. Like Maurice Malpist said, it might not be in the cut, but the old curly finger for the groundsman might have been saying, like, come on, boys, get off my pitch. Right, well, speaking of wrapping things up, we're done. It's the end. John, absolute legend for joining us again. Really appreciate your company. Always a pleasure, sir. Hopefully have you back on before the end of the season. Laura, you're all right.
One more thing, Andrew, because I never touched on this earlier. What is growing that tash?
Oh, the Jack Sparrow look.
Oh, I don't.
This is why you need to watch us on YouTube rather than just listen to us as a podcast, because what is going on with that?
It was my daughter's 4th birthday party, and in true 4-year-old style, she wanted and was adamant that it should be a unicorn and pirate party. So for a laugh, I decided to have a wee shave and keep a wee bit of a bit of colour around my mooey, as they say down in London.
Wow. Never heard that term. And was her birthday a week ago?
It's a London thing. No, it's her birthday actually on Wednesday, probably when this podcast gets out. But not, do you not think I suit it, no?
Yeah.
I'm not asking you, John. I know you'll be a big fan. Oh, well. Thanks for the support, guys. I'll shave it straight away.
Thank you.
If you're still listening now, go away, please. Go and listen to something else now, please. But also, thank you for listening. And go watch us on YouTube, and you can see my moustache. Goodbye.